Imagine a government run by people, not money. Challenging, right? Now imagine an organization whose goal is to organize Americans to win the 28th Amendment to the Constitution to restore American democracy in which we, the people, not big money, not corporations, not unions, not special interests, govern ourselves. Hi, everyone. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. For this next hour, we're going to be talking about America's promise, democracy restored. The truth is that legally granted right to unchecked political spending by big corporations, unions, and wealthy special interest groups is silencing the voices of citizens and corrupting our ability to freely and fairly elect a representative government of, by, and for the people. Our guest today is here to educate us about one organization that is working to bring about much-needed change. Jeff Clements, president and board member of American Promise. American Promise exists to empower, inspire, and organize Americans to win the 28th Amendment to the Constitution. They're working diligently to bring about this lasting reform that will rebalance our politics and governments by putting the rights of individual citizens before the privileges of concentrated money, corporations, unions, political parties, and super PACs. From where I sit, there's just no downside, regardless of your political affiliation. Jeff, welcome. You can tell by the emphasis I'm putting on some of these words that I have a little passion connected to this conversation. But thanks so much for being here and for what your organization is working to accomplish.
Well, thank you, Gina. I'm really glad to be here and appreciate that all that you do and your passion on this issue, which is shared by so many Americans.
You should have seen me. I'm right, and I'm saying, yes, yes, this is what we need, yes. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Green Movement. We need fair elections, and I just think most people should be hoping for the same thing. But anyway, I just want to share a little bit more about you. For our audience, Jeff is the author of the 2014 book, Corporations Are Not People, Reclaiming Democracy from Big Money and Global Corporations. He has served as an assistant attorney general and as chief of the Public Protection Bureau in the Massachusetts Attorney General's office. In private practice in Boston, he has been a partner at Mintz Levin and in his own firm. In 2002, Jeff co-founded Whaleback Partners, which provides cost-effective capital to farmers and businesses in local agriculture. Jeff, you are someone I certainly am proud to have on the show and someone I probably would like to be friends with. So thanks for being here.
Thank you, Gina. Appreciate that.
So let's start by you're painting the big picture for us about big money in politics and how do we get here. And if you can answer that for me, it's a conversation that's on our plates in our family and with our friends regularly. How did we get here? How did big money become the major driver into who gets elected?
Well, Gina, it's a little bit like what they say about bankruptcy. It happens gradually and then all at once. And that's how we got in this situation in America where basically massive donors, whether corporations or otherwise, are able to influence the outcome of our elections far more than the people. And it started in many ways, money and politics have always gone together. But the modern path to where we are now began after the Nixon administration and the corruption scandals that emerged back in the early 1970s when President Nixon was forced to resign. In many ways, that was a campaign finance scandal that the Nixon campaign had been running big money from corporations and others into the political system. And when it was revealed, we had a lot of good laws passed. The Federal Election Commission was created. There were anti-corruption laws. There was big reform. And it went to the Supreme Court in a case called Buckley, and the Supreme Court, in its wisdom, decided that spending money is free speech. And there were still made some balance, though, about that. There were some rules set up that, you know, basically this seed that spending money was just free speech created some problems along the way, but it really wasn't until the modern Citizens United decision, famously in 2010, struck down our Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act at the federal level, and then went on to strike down state laws under a theory that the Constitution, First Amendment free speech rights, gives the rights of the powerful, the biggest corporations, the wealthiest people, the right to dominate with money rather than actual speech. And so we now have billions of dollars coming into elections, and the people have lost our right of free speech because it's now equated to spending money in elections. So that's what the constitutional problem was created. The domination of the money now is, according to the Supreme Court, it's not corrupt. So therefore, it's just free speech. It's even a good thing, right? Who can argue with free speech? So it's become what used to be considered sordid corruption is now bragged about you know, how much Tom Steyer, who's, you know, many environmentalists, of course, sympathize with his goals, but he spent $95 million in the 2016 election. On the other side, Sheldon Adelson or the Koch brothers spending hundreds of millions of dollars. And that is considered perfectly fine, according to the Supreme Court. That's new in American history. It's a radical reinterpretation of the idea of free speech. And what it really does is empower the powerful and diminish just about everybody else, and leading to a crisis, because it affects all of us, our lives, our drinking water, our air, our food, everything, and the future, of course, too. So it's a constitutional issue that got us here, and now it's created a systemic dynamic that's happening very quickly to undermine democracy.
And one of the things that I love that you have already pointed out, just don't start pointing the finger at someone because they're in another political party. It just doesn't work. And we saw it here in Arizona. And I guess what shocks me, even at my age, is that you can just lie through your teeth for a political ad. And if you have enough money, it gets put on the air. It doesn't matter. The truth has no place in these conversations. None. None whatsoever. I remember when we were trying to pass the legalization of marijuana, and the ads against it were so compelling about all of the garbage that happened in Colorado, and the money didn't go to schools and on and on. Well, fortunately, I have family in Colorado. So I called them up and I said, is there really that much corruption? And one of my sister-in-law, she's a teacher, and she said, do you know what's happened to our schools, how we're funded, how now we have papers and pencils and supplies and computers? Because yes, the money has gone to education. So it's just, it was such barefaced lying. It just blew me away. So it's a perfect segue to this next question, though. Do you have a sense, given what you do, for how do Americans feel about the state of money in politics? Are they as upset as I obviously am? And do they care? Do they know how bad things really are? What's your sense for where do Americans stand on this issue?
Yeah, and you know, Gina, I've been over the last few years with American Promise working on this in probably 35 to 40 states. We have members in all 50 states, a few hundred thousand across the country. And I can tell you with absolute certainty, yes, Americans care very much. They care across the political spectrum about this, and they're hungry to do something about it. And we see that in whether it's polls that consistently show over 80%, 75 to 85% support for a constitutional amendment that will allow us to put a lid on the domination of money in our political system and empower citizens in our democracy. We see it not just in polls, though. And here's the key thing. American Promise is helping to lead ballot initiatives at the local level and the state level in favor of this amendment. And again, we see consistently when Americans have a chance to do something and to say, you know, the Supreme Court got it wrong, we're going to fix it, they come out, they organize, they work hard, and then they vote. And it's, again, 75, 80% levels. So we had a ballot initiative just this past November in Massachusetts that created a citizen commission to advance a constitutional amendment to address the problem of money in politics. Over 1,000 volunteers collected 100,000 signatures. The Republican governor endorsed it. The Democrats, like Elizabeth Warren, endorsed it. 72% voted yes. We want to do the citizen commission, and now the applications are coming in to get involved. to help move this amendment forward in Massachusetts. We see it like that across the country. And so I think, you know, that's the good news in all this, is that Americans, we really do believe in our promise of our country, that we're going to be equal citizens governing effectively together. Even if we disagree, we're going to figure out how to govern and have fair elections and decide issues in a responsible, effective way. We know that's not possible unless we do some big fundamental change, and Americans are stepping up to get it done.
So it's another perfect segue, and this is a show to me about hope. Tell us a bit about the American Promise, the organization, and what are you putting forth as a solution? How can we change things? And is it going to happen in my lifetime, Jeff?
It absolutely is going to happen in your lifetime. Have faith, Gina. We're 3 years into a 10-year game plan, so we're all eating our vegetables to make sure we're going to be here for the victory by July 4th, 2026. That's only 6 or so years away.
I know, it's like tomorrow. That's how I feel the way time's gone. Yeah. Like, is it really March? Are we getting ready for summer here? It's 87 in Tucson, Arizona. It's like, what? And last week it was 50 and snowed up in the mountains. So anyway.
Well, exactly. The time flies. So the sooner we get working on this,
the better. We can accelerate that. Yeah. So tell us about American Promise. It gives me hope.
It gives me hope too. And what the reason we started it in January 2016, you mentioned my book kindly enough. And when in 2015, I was on a tour around the country, a book tour, and went to so many states and saw so many people. And it didn't matter if it was red states, blue states, Republicans, Democrats, Independents. So many Americans were eager to hear about this, to want to figure out how to get involved, to get past the kind of toxic division. To begin moving the country forward. You know, people think about not just issues, they think about their kids and the next generation and the earth and everything else. And the way that people I saw could connect together, especially in our politics, because our politics would send you to one side or the other and quickly divide us on an issue that we actually have to come together to fix. And so American Promise was launched in order to create that place where we can come together to do big, fundamental, and permanent reform. And the only way to do that is at the constitutional level. The Supreme Court broke our Constitution by deciding that money is just free speech and our equal rights as citizens doesn't count. So we need a constitutional amendment to fix it. That's why it's the 28th Amendment. It's the same solution we've turned to since the Bill of Rights all the way to women getting the right to vote and many other amendments that built our democracy at its best. So that's what American Promise was built to do. We have Republicans, Democrats, Independents coming together. We have people like, you know, Nina Turner, who's an Our Revolution president, and Bernie Sanders advocate. And at the other end of the spectrum, we have Senator Al Simpson, former Senator Republican from Wyoming, and Senator Olympia Snow, former Republican from Maine. And those are sort of the well-known political types of people, but the core of American Promise is nobody's going to do this for us. And that's why our membership is so important. And that's why we have, you know, people in every state, volunteers, we call them citizen leaders, coming together, going through our trainings, and then doing things like the ballot initiatives and local organizing and helping to bring this message of both big needed reform and hope for the future into their community, and then we turn that into the power to drive this amendment through Congress into ratification in the states.
So it really is grassroots, and the thing that makes me really happy, as pithy as that may sound, is we need more initiatives that do find common ground. And it's I don't want to live my life in a house divided, and I am one of those people. I'm trying really hard to find more common ground. Like, everybody likes clean oceans and everybody likes clean rivers and how we get there. So this, to me, as I said when I was preparing for the show, it's like this is an end game in and of itself to bring people together, because I lived in a time when there were so many decent Republicans and so many decent Democrats. I've worked at our state legislature. I've done a little bit at the policy level in D.C. back in the day when I was head of the refugee program. But it didn't matter. You went to see your Republican representative and your Democratic representative, and things happened. Really good things happened.
That's right.
So that gives me hope. So this is a kind of like, I really played around with this question because I want to like go deeper, as it were. But why do you believe, and why does American Promise believe in the importance of empowering citizens to help make this change in our nation? Is there, I don't want to answer the question for you, but is there a lack of hope, a lack of engagement? Is that why people don't vote? Why do you think this is so important to make this change?
Well, it's a really good question, and there's multiple reasons and levels for it. So first, yes, a lot of people, too many, are checked out, cynical, angry,
because they don't think they matter. They don't think their vote matters. They think it's all fixed.
And in many ways, they're right.
Yep.
So it's not an irrational choice to say, "Hey, I am disrespected. I'm not treated like a citizen. I don't have the same power that somebody with a lot of money has. I'm a sucker if I play this game." And that is how democracies die. So what we have to do is turn that into sort of thaw that resignation or anger or hopelessness into not just hope, but actual power to believe, basically to reject that feeling and say, "Well, that's how I'm being treated, but that's not the way I am, or not the way I'm going to be. I'm going to be a citizen, and if I'm a citizen with power as a citizen and responsibility, I need to act. And how do we act? Well, that's what American Promise can do. The other thing, though, is our goal is very focused. There's a lot of good reforms, many needed reforms. We focus on the constitutional foundation that can support all kinds of other reforms and restore our rights as citizens. So that's why we need a constitutional amendment. And the thing about an amendment to the Constitution is you get 2/3 of Congress, and then it gets ratified by 3/4 of the states. So it's a huge lift. It doesn't just happen. And Congress is usually the last one to come around to get it done after Americans have made it happen. So we've looked at, how did women win the right to vote? Why do we elect senators with an amendment? How did 18, 19, 20-year-olds get the right to vote? Why do we have equal voting rights regardless of race? All of those big, big things didn't happen because politicians woke up one day and said, "Oh, we'd be a better country if we did those things," right?
That would have been a dream that you woke up from.
Yeah. So it became clear, well, if we really want to do something about it, whether we like it or not, it's up to us. And so, you know, I have children. I have hopes for the future after I'm gone. And I know other Americans do too. And I think we all want to be able to say we did what we could to restore the hope for the next generation that they'll be able to live in a democracy that works well. And so that means by definition, if you're really trying to get the power as citizens to drive something as big as this and get 2/3 of Congress, you need very good strategy. But no strategy is going to work unless you have what I call a citizen uprising. And I don't mean uprising in the violent, angry sense. I mean the rising up of citizens in our best selves as responsible people who aren't going to wait for politicians to fix it, but are going to move this amendment forward. And then we'll end up with better politicians, better elected officials, and mostly a system that allows people to serve in politics and actually achieve good things. And many people in our current system want to do that. It's just very hard to do that. So it's up to us, the people, once again, to kind of rescue the country. And it's not, that's what the Constitution was designed for. No democracy works for 200 years without a renewal from the people. It doesn't just go on autopilot.
Yeah. There's some things that are getting kind of old.
It needs a good refreshment. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's why we do it. We do it because it's a good thing, and it's nice. We all feel better when we're citizen empowered and when we're working together. But it's also just strategy. We have to do it, or things will get very bad and very worse fast. So we do it because it's effective strategy as well.
And when you talk to people, I'm very involved in a lot of the political scenes here, and the first thing the most important thing and the thing that's talked about all the time is helping to raise money. That's it. That's the end game. Because if you don't, your chances of winning are too slim and none. And you can see that time after time after time. So to me, when you talk about an uprising, it's an uprising of our voices to say, I might want to run for office. And I'm not a millionaire like most of the representatives in Congress. And don't get me wrong, I don't have anything against being a millionaire. That's wonderful. But that shouldn't be what it takes to have our voices be represented in our government. I mean, it's daunting to me. And I vote, I work to get people to vote because I'm never going to give up. But there are people that say, what's the difference? What's the difference? My vote can't count. Big money's going to deal and going to do what happens anyway. So, but Jeff, do we have to have a constitutional amendment? It is such a heavy lift. And that's what I put in my notes. It's a big deal. Is this the way that we really have to go to make it happen?
Well, it's not the only way. I shouldn't say it's not the only thing to do. There are many good things to do and many good people trying to do many different things. But if we don't fix the Constitution, if we don't fix the idea that unlimited money, even billions of dollars from any source, anywhere, is just free speech, then we can't actually succeed in the long run. Because we won't be changing the fundamental dynamic that got us here. I mean, the reason we are in this problem is because we have a constitutional struggle between those who think that people are equal citizens, and therefore we have to be really careful about the role of concentrated capital, concentrated money in our political system, because that traditionally has turned republics into oligarchies. You know, basically, if you value money as the way that elected officials are elected and respond to, then you're devaluing citizens. And if we don't fix that, I don't think we'll be able to fix the other things, because whether it's, you know, big industry or whether it's special interests, we won't solve the problem of $22 trillion in debt, climate catastrophe unfolding across the world, healthcare and opioids and other issues, because there's so much money, billions and billions of dollars at stake. And so we have to be able to have an effective democracy. And that will take a constitutional amendment, because the Supreme Court has said so. Basically, the Supreme Court said this is the way it's going to be. 5-4 decision in Citizens United. But the amendment is moving very well. Most people support it. And I think we can get this done. And when we do, we will have reversed the Supreme Court, but it will be the 9th time we did that in human history. And I mean, in American history, the Supreme Court has been reversed by constitutional amendments 8 times. So we can say it's hard, but are we really prepared to say we can't do what previous generations of Americans did? Why not? I think we can. And I think we're as capable as any generation of Americans to do what we have to do. And that's why I think we can win this amendment.
And you really believe, and the people that are involved and working hard in American Promise really believe that we the American people, can make this change?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me tell you why. It's not just like, oh,
it's not airy fairy pie in the sky.
Jeff's a cheerleader kind of thing. I mean, I am a cheerleader and happy to be so, because I've learned everything in American history is a surprise. And, you know, the whole project of from Declaration of Independence to, you know, landing on the moon, Americans are used to doing things that, you know, people would have said are impossible. But that alone, and I'm not just saying it because I believe in the American people, which I do. I see it happen. So, you know, when I filed a brief. I'm a lawyer, and filed a brief in the Supreme Court in the Citizens United case. And when this court did what it did, to unleash the floodgates of money, some people started saying, well, we have to do an amendment. And I thought, as a lawyer, that actually is right, but is it really possible? And lo and behold, I get involved, like other people started to do. And when we had maybe one member of Congress who was on board. Hawaii was actually the first state to formally pass a resolution in favor of the amendment. Nobody else had done that. Well, look where we are now. Just a few years later, we probably within a few weeks, New Hampshire is about to become the 20th state to formally say, Congress, we want this amendment back to the states to be ratified. And that is because of people power pushing for it. 800 cities and towns. You know, you're in Arizona. Some of those include like Tucson and Flagstaff.
I know. I was really happy to see that. And I know some of the people that have signed the pledge. I'm like, go Paula.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm looking at them thinking, whoa, it's right here. Who knew? Obviously, I didn't.
Exactly. So 19 states, 800 cities and towns, people in Arizona and across the country actually doing this. And look what that has done to Congress. So we had one person back then. Now I predict with some confidence that we will have 240 members of the House signed up for this amendment by the end of this Congress. We have that many commitments. The amendment has been introduced with a Republican and a Democrat joining together, Ted Deutsch of Florida and John Katko, upstate New York Republican, Ted Deutsch, a Democrat from Florida, joining together to introduce the amendment because the people have led the way. I think we'll be close to 50 senators. By the end, we'll need 67 senators and 290 House members. But because of what people have done across the country in all of these states, working hard to do resolutions and win ballot initiatives and get their states on record calling for this amendment, Congress is being for, and the pledge campaign that you mentioned, Gina, saying candidates who are running for office need to pledge to support the amendment so voters know they're going to do it. It makes a difference. So I can be a cheerleader easily because I see our history proves we do these big things, but I also see it every day across the country, and I see the amazing progress we've made. And so to me, it feels like it would be irresponsible not to keep pushing and trying to do this big win because we really have a historic opportunity to do it, and it's happening
and
before
it is
our
what,
eyes.
And it is what gives me hope. And I really, really try to keep politics out of my podcast because I don't want to be divisive. And our tagline used to be, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. But knowing that so many people do know my true political leanings, it's a sad time for me. And I'm a believer in really taking care of people that can't take care of themselves and giving them a hand up, not a hand out, and all of that stuff. But the bottom line is when I get to my dark side, I think, no, I believe in America. I believe in American people, and I'm going to keep fighting for the changes that I want to see happen in this country, and it's happening, so it's not all bad. So, Jeff, what about the flip side? Do you have any concerns that doing this could have, like, the opposite effect? Because there's a part where, depending upon what your beliefs, that big money does help get the word out about certain initiatives and certain things that are going to happen. And even if it's not a government entity, you know, defenders of wildlife need money, big money, to stop the wolves from being shot in their dens and their little pups being gassed. Is there any chance that it could hurt or limit democracy or freedom of speech or freedom of the press? Is there a potential downside?
Well, no, there isn't. But here's why. I'm not saying there's not a downside or a potential downside because the amendment is perfection itself. What the amendment does is actually give us a chance to solve these problems, but it doesn't answer all the questions. That's up to us and up to future generations about what kind of laws they want to have for our political system. What the amendment does is give us the power to have those laws, to make those decisions, which we don't have right now. Right now, there is one rule, whether you like it or not, unlimited money, billions of dollars, politicians spending 50 to 80% of their time dialing for dollars, talking only to rich people instead of constituents. That's the only thing we're allowed to have now. What the amendment does is give us a chance to build a different kind of politics. And there will always be money. You need money. And this amendment doesn't prevent money coming in for candidates, for causes. That will always be the case. But what it does is allow us to have a system where, imagine the same amount of money coming from millions and millions and millions of Americans.
I know, $10
a piece.
Instead
of just a few. Exactly. That. Then we don't have the corruption problem. And we have the benefit that many more Americans are actually at the table and able to participate. And so that's what the amendment does. It doesn't say, oh, no money in politics. It says no corrupt money, meaning the money from only a few people. Right now, you know, we looked at the numbers. It's close to $50 billion has been spent in the election since the Citizens United decision in 2010.
Makes me sick.
And here, but here's the real problem. If apart from the amount of money, most of it comes from less than 1% of the population.
Right. That's what I was going to say. It's the 1%.
Yeah. So it's concentrated among a few. And so if we had the same amount of money coming from, you know, 90% of the people, that is a different kind of dynamic. And so it's not really just about money, as most big constitutional issues are. It's about whether we have equal rights and whether we're going to have a political system that represents people instead of concentrated economic interests. And that's what this amendment will do. And there is, it doesn't get rid of the First Amendment or the Supreme Court or anything. What it says is basically Section 1, we the people can enact laws to have reasonable limits on spending in elections in order to protect the political equality of Americans and the integrity of elections. We shouldn't have to say that. It sounds obvious, but we do have to say that and get it into the Constitution. And Section 2 says we can distinguish between corporations and human beings in making those laws. And so it's simple, powerful constitutional language, but it will still have lots of disputes about, you know, the First Amendment and the freedom of the press, just as we do today. But there's a much, much bigger risk of not doing this amendment and allowing things to continue to spin out of control than there is of fixing it with this amendment.
And sometimes people see the topics and the guests we're going to have, and they're like, you know, Gina, Mrs. Green's World, you're environmental educators, and we've so expanded our vision of what an environmental educator is someone that understands you cannot have a sustainable planet without a socially just one. And to me, this fits in that social justice space because our voices are not being heard. It is the 1% that don't represent me. And so to me, it was like, it was such a perfect fit. So I'm curious about what groups are out there trying to prevent this. Are there concentrated efforts or concerted efforts that are saying we cannot let this group go any farther and coming after you? Are there some big barriers out there?
Yeah, you know, we're starting to see that, which is probably a good sign because that means
we're succeeding. You're absolutely right. They're a little
scared.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we're beginning to see that. And you know, you mentioned the environment. I think so many people who come into this work come from that perspective. And it doesn't mean right or left or particular policies around the environment.
Right.
But all Americans have a connection to the environment. They all want to have water that comes out of the tap that they can have their kids drink without fear. And, you know, we all know that in the end, whether it's jobs or anything else that sustains us, if we have to have the earth and our communities be healthy enough to sustain us and future generations. And so I think people rightly see that that's no longer possible because if you're a gas or oil corporation, for example, you're duty bound to be making profits and you're not thinking of next generations because that's not part of your corporate charter.
And your shareholders don't care.
And your shareholders don't care. And if they do care individually as a system, they're not able to put that care into actual effect. So that's why I think you actually see so many people concerned about the environment doing this, but you also see it with healthcare and everything else. So you know, I think that's really why we see the cross the board support, because that's true on so many different issues.
Right. And you know, this may sound weird, but it occurred to me that there are lots of people, even with money, that would say, what a relief. They would just go, oh, thank goodness that this is not going to be all about money. I'm a staunch Republican and I believe in these things and I want it to happen because it's what I believe is better for the country. Or I'm a Democrat that wants to see Head Start funded and it's not going to take me hundreds of millions of dollars to run for office so that I can put that forth as part of my agenda. It's got to be, for some really decent human beings, a relief if it happens. Like it becomes about the issues and not about the money.
I see that all the time, Gina. It's so true. And, you know, there are wealthy people who really don't appreciate being called all the time to be hit up by their politicians.
There even us not wealthy people. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I was so glad when the election was over. It's like, oh, my goodness, my phone stopped ringing.
Yeah. And, you know, we have American Promise, Business for American Promise. There are business councils around the country, business leaders stepping up to say, first, we're citizens, too, and also concerned about the future of this country. But even as business people, we don't think it's good not only for democracy, it's not good for business to have a sort of pay-to-play system. They would rather compete in the economic marketplace and have fair rules rather than having their competitor put in big money into a campaign that then rewrites the rules and puts them out of business. Okay. So, you know, they, to a business perspective, sometimes it feels not like bribery that they're doing, but extortion that they're getting hit up for money to the political campaigns when they just would rather be able to vote how they wanted to vote as individuals and then do their business how they want to do it rather than be dragged into the politics. So I, that's what, you know, you talk about opponents and, you know, there's some, but generally speaking, it doesn't break down into, you know, all wealthy people want to have all that extra power they have now, and it doesn't break down into business being against this. Just the opposite. It's a minority of people who want to abuse power that the Supreme Court lets them abuse in order to advance certain interests. And I think Americans can come together and say, no, that's not how we're going to be. And we'll have Republicans, Democrats, independents, wealthy people, not wealthy people, business people, labor, everybody saying, look, let's get a fair system that works.
And a couple of months ago, I interviewed the head of Green Corps, which is an organization that trains young people to go work in local communities to bring about change, systemic change. And Jeff, it's working. It's not using a lot of money, but they teach these people how to organize, how to mount campaigns, how to focus your energy. And they've done some amazing, amazing work and have had really big impact when it comes to the environment and stopping certain things and supporting certain things. So it doesn't really have to be all about the money, even though it helps. But a perfect segue again is it really does take money. Even when it's such an organic grassroots movement like you are working to bring about. So how do you raise funds? Because at the end of the day, yes, it's going to take some money. How do you raise funds to make this all work?
Well, it does take money, and there's a bit of irony in that. But
what I said. It's almost ironic. It's an ironic reality. Yeah, we don't want big money, but we do need some.
Exactly. And you know, we are doing this big historic push across the whole country, wanting to involve all Americans and succeed in ballot initiatives and pledge campaigns and really moving this to victory in just a short time in this decade. And so to do that, obviously, it's going to take millions of dollars. So, but what we want to do is, A, model the system that we want to see, so transparent, involving everybody, and B, have it be effective and so people know that if they pitch in their $50 or whatever, they're getting immense value from that. And we live by that every day. So we disclose all our donors on the website. AmericanPromise.net is our website. And we have thousands of donors, 95% of which are under $200. Our average contribution is around $30. And what we say is, you know, we want to do this as people, as citizens. And that means we give of ourselves, we volunteer, and we pitch in. It's all part of sort of being responsible that let's do this together. Nobody's going to do it for us. And so that's how we raise the money. And it's AmericanPromise.net. And we're a membership organization. And I think people who pitch in feel that's sort of the first step of investing and being empowered in this work. And of course, for our big, we do a big national citizen leadership conference. We have writing the 28th Amendment town halls across the country, and we do raise money from foundations and other sort of bigger contributions for that kind of stuff. And they're all listed on our website, too.
So there's full transparency, which matters a lot, too. Sometimes trying to find things and how it's funded, you can't, it's such an opaque you know, opaque, whatever, like looking for money. I've looked for money for the Wildlife Service in the federal budget, and some congressmen can't find it any better than I can. So it's, to have full disclosure in this day and age, to me, matters just about as much as anything. Because if you're not ashamed or embarrassed about what you're doing, then tell me, and I'll get my own, I'll make my own decision based on who your friends are. So
absolutely right. And so we can, I can give people even more specifics. So we have frequently asked questions, and there's a question, how is American Promise funded? And the answers are all laid out there with names and people and foundations who contribute to us. As Gina, I completely agree. If we have to walk the walk, if we want to build a democracy that's effective and works, then we have to act like we want to see our democracy act like too. And that means responsible pitch in, but it also means transparency and really representative of the people, not of a few interests.
So the best, I mean, I try to bring it up when I remember it, when I visit a website that really is just clean and easy to navigate and tells me what I want to know, and yours is all that. It's not a you know, a maze of, I'm not sure where I have to click. So I encourage people to do that. And then other than money, are there ways that people can get involved? And I always like to say, even if you're listening to this and what you can do this week is $10, just do it. Because if 100 people decided they could do $10, guess what, folks? We got a show here. So I just encourage people to do that. So helping support you financially is great. What are some other calls to action? Look for an office in your state. Is that, what else would you advise? Because we have active listeners, obviously. If you're a part of Mrs. Green's World Tribe, you care about lots of things.
Yeah, and we're so grateful for that. They all do so much good work. And I want to emphasize the money, of course, is important, but what's most important is signing up to join in this great work. And so if you go to our website, AmericanPromise.net, there's a button that says sign up to learn more. And that's how, and we ask for a zip code, and then there's a whole check of boxes about what you'd like to do. I'd like to know more about joining an American Promise Association in my neighborhood. I'd like to host an event. I'd like to get involved in the Candidate Pledge Program. We actually have those choices on the website. If you click to sign up to learn more, you don't have to put a penny in if you don't want to. And we'd love to get in touch with you, because we think once you learn more about this, you'll want to get involved. And so what we try to do, we call ourselves, you know, citizen empowerment, because that's actually what we want to do. We know we're not going to be able to do this everywhere. So what we do is help find people who want to join or start an American Promise Association in their neighborhood. Or if that's even too much and they just want to say, look, I want to just get a letter into my member of Congress, or could do a letter to the editor or learn more, you can sign up there and we try to match specific actions with what people want to do. Or you could just sign up and keep tabs on our good work and our newsletter, and then find out. And as you learn more, decide how you want to weigh in.
And just don't ever think you can't make a difference. That's what I have to keep telling myself, that my voice might not have been heard today, but maybe someone will listen tomorrow, because we can't give that up, because that is truly what makes this a wonderful, strong country. I almost said the words that it makes America great, and I didn't want that to come out because I can't help it. But this is a great country, and I'm proud to say that. So let's make sure that, don't ever think your voice doesn't matter, because that's the beginning of the end of our democracy, if you ask me. So you gave us a lot of good words. Is there anything else you'd like to cover before the last words of wisdom from Mrs. Green?
Well, thank you, Gina. Thanks to Mrs. Green and all your listeners. And I just want to say that, as you said, it's absolutely true that our voices really do matter. And if we put our voices together, we can really do some big transformative change. So, I know so many people are doing a lot. And so if you're in your work, whether it's environmental or otherwise, you know, mention the constitutional amendment idea.
This is a big one. I agree.
It's a big one. And we want to work across the board with everybody. So we look forward to to work with. Everyone is hearing this. Yeah.
You know, my daughter is very involved in the League of Women Voters, and this is one that I'm going to share with her because it is definitely not a partisan issue. And I have so much respect for that organization, and she's actually the president of one of the regions here. So I'm going to pass this information on to her to see, you know, where it goes from there. But you're right, it can be integrated into many other conversations. So I just I appreciate you, and I believe that the way that this came about is because of Bioneers. Someone was there. And we love Bioneers. We love going, and we had three of us go this year. And they are all about, you know, creating a world that works for everyone. And I have so much respect for them. So I always like to give them a shout out if I can. And before I do close the show, I want to forward promote two shows. We just have such great guests, and I feel so grateful for my team that finds them and for the guests that say yes. But our local show on April 4th is with Liz Baker Bowman, Deputy Director of SARSEF, as part of the TEP Bright E series. And SARSEF is just, in a few words, just dedicated to STEM and to getting kids educated in science and getting them excited. I'm going to be a SARSEF judge for their big event on Thursday. And they are just doing, I can't wait for people to hear about what they're doing. And then our national show is on the 9th with Dr. Mike Biddle, from Garbage Man to Carbon Wrangler and Investor. And I just have to say, oh my gosh, Jeff, I had a pre-call with him because he requested it. And it's like a hashtag OMG. This guy is a brainiac and wanted to create a way to break down hard plastic into their micro, you know, their micro dots or whatever. And he did. He worked for Dow Chemical and quit and went out on his own. And he made so much money taking recycled plastic and making it into it that he is now an investor in clean energy. And it was just a great pre-interview. So we have that to look forward to. And now my thoughts. Trust me when I say that this show has everything to do with fighting the biggest battle our world has ever faced, the impact of ever-present climate change. Big money, big oil, big ag, big pharma, they all have in some way contributed to climate change, or at the very least, the travesties that can be witnessed every day in the social justice arena where climate change strikes first, hardest, and is ostensibly the most devastating. American Promise gives me hope because big money hasn't helped us move forward in the election process. If big money wins, our lands are invaded, the rights of many are frequently compromised, and there is little or no consideration given to anything except ROI and money. I hope you'll be inspired to find out more about the important work of this organization. The 12 years to change clock is ticking, and our actions now are already impacting our present and our future. Thanks to everyone for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. And Jeff, thank you for taking the time to be on the show and for what you do for all our sakes.
No, thank you so much.
Take care, everybody. Get out there and let your voice be heard. Thanks.